Hello and welcome back to The Shift of Land. I'm Sarah Parker. The Shift of Land is a 13-part series which focuses on the connection between land, culture, and agriculture in the state. Throughout this series, we've focused on the connection between land and culture and agriculture, where agriculture came from and to where it's going. This is the last program in our series, and in it, we will be exploring the ritual and tradition that comes from the land and which is seen in New Mexican tradition and culture. One of the questions that we've been asking in this series is, what does it mean to be New Mexican? This question is especially important today as the state grows and is expected to grow by 85% in the next 40 years. Many different people from many different places are coming into the state. So what does it mean to be New Mexican? Does it mean respecting the existing culture, or does it mean bringing your culture in and imposing it? Ritual and tradition are a part of all cultures. Dr. Sylvia Rodriguez, anthropologist from UNM in Albuquerque, explains.
Well, what is ritual? I mean, ritual is patterned, repeated behavior that involves a lot of collective work. Ritual, and I'm talking here primarily about religious ritual, because obviously we have secular rituals as well. Ritual is something that all peoples engage in one form or another. And traditional land-based peoples have their different kinds of rituals. And the kind that I've most looked at are those among Catholic parishioners in northern New Mexico. But I think, you know, obviously the Pueblo peoples, the Navajos, the other Native American groups, as well as Anglo-American groups, have their ritual forms. Ritual requires cooperative behavior. It's set off usually at a special time, whether it's Sunday morning or whatever, Saturday night, Friday for different religious groups. It often takes place in special places. It involves often its own kinds of language, as well as other dance, special language, songs, incense, prayer. Sometimes substances are imbibed in certain groups as part of the ritual procedure. Often involves feasting of some kind, holy images. In other words, it's a special occasion that sort of consecrates particular symbolic forms. And it brings people collectively to celebrate their collectivity. The sociologist Durkheim suggests that what people were celebrating in these collective moments, where what was achieved was greater than what any single individual could achieve, that there was intensified by the fact that it's a collective activity, they were really celebrating in some sense their collectivity. Most people will tell you that what they're celebrating is their relationship to their divinities, to God or the saints or their or whatever. But I think that these are special moments that people engage in where there's a lot of stuff that's going on. You could say, well, it reaffirms their connection to each other. It involves the exchange of goods and services. If there's feasting, you know, who puts it up, who pays for it, how much labor is involved. There's a lot of work involved. It's exchange. It helps reaffirm people's sense of belonging, of their connection to each other. It also is a transformative process that for people to participate in ritual, it involves a kind of takes place at a particular place in a particular time that has a certain duration, that's time that's set off, sort of special from everyday workday activity. You may get dressed up for it. But in going through it, there's a kind of inner and a kind of outer transformation that takes place. It's like, say, when somebody dies. Regardless of what you believe, it seems to me, about what happens to people when they die, whether they go to heaven or whether this is it, that going through the ritual, whatever that may be, of acknowledging the passing, whether it's a funeral ritual, a mass, the saying of rosaries, whatever it is, it brings people together to acknowledge this enormous passage that's taking place. And in some sense, I think it gives them a context in which they can share their emotions. It gives them a form in which they can express or suppress their emotions. And it reaffirms the continuity of the group. So in a way, funerals or other kinds of rituals, whether they're rites of passage or calendrical rituals, they give people a form, that has a kind of continuity and a kind of collectivity to it. And it affirms your meaning, and it relates you to larger forces, however you may think of those, whether you're thinking of God or the saints or the ancestors or the Kachinas or whatever. It takes you and relates you as an individual to the collectivity, and the collectivity to the forces that rule nature. And it's a profoundly important process that people seem to be pursuing all over, you know, that seems to be one of the universals, although the particulars of what people believe and how they do it may vary. Ritual behavior, and particularly ritual that relates people to the holy, is pretty widespread in the world. It may be universal. And it's very pervasive all over New Mexico among Catholic peoples, but other peoples as well. I mean, obviously the ritual cycles of the Native American groups are part and parcel of their culture and their traditions and who they are. I mean, very often when people say, we're losing our culture, often what they mean is not only that they're maybe losing their language, but they're no longer doing their old rituals. And there's a sense that as long as you participate in these rituals and you do them the right way, and they're passed on from one generation to another, they reaffirm who you are. They keep you going. And I think they keep people going as individual believers or participants, as well as groups, as well as a kind of self-identified people. And very often these ritual processes relate people to their place. Certainly the Native American dances and other ceremonials are often very tightly connected to place. And I think a lot of the folk Catholic rituals are too. Procession, it seems to me, is a ritual about place because it goes through space and it stops at certain places and then it returns to where it came from. And that territory that it marks, that it circumscribes, that it inscribes, I mean, you're inscribing the place, you're making it sort of reconfirming its holiness, and you're also inscribing your own body with your membership that's publicly observed in this process. So ritual, I think, is central to people's sense of who they are, as individuals, but as members of groups.
Dr. Tessie Naranjo and Dr. Suellen Jacobs, co-directors of the Northern Pueblos Institute, explain the feeling that comes from ritual after many years. Naranjo comes from the Santa Clara Pueblo.
Very basic.
So it extends what you were saying about your grandmother and your, well, your great-grandmother, the female lineage that you were talking about. You said, listen to me, I'm talking about the female line. But that line is also the earth. What I just heard you say is that you are in relationship with that entity as well as all the entities that are related to that earth. So that gives another kind of orientation toward your dad's hunting, fishing, farming.
What I like about the concept of being in relationship with the earth is not only the earth, but also everything that makes up the universe. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of the clouds. The clouds are so ever present here in our state, so that in just a matter of moving your head from downward to upward, you see these wonderful billowing of the clouds and the movement of the clouds, and then you start thinking about how they also are in relationship with the humans that occupy the land. And so this kind of relationship and this belief structure that we've framed, that my ancestors have framed, is just so wonderful because it's all about connections. Land to sky, then also, yeah, the wind and the movement and the changing of the seasons, all of that, it's all about the flowing and the flow of life, and that we are in this wonderful, wonderful movement, and we are about being in relationship with all things that we call our opa. Opa is the universe.
And how do you travel through that?
How do you travel through the opa or the universe? You travel seasonally. And we do it so well here in northern New Mexico. Not only the Pueblo people, but all people who live here in northern New Mexico. It just seems natural for us to move according to the seasons. There are definite seasonal changes. There's a fall, there's a spring, there's the winter in between, and then there's the summer. So that everything has this flowing movement, and we, the human people that populate the land, move along with the changes of the seasons and what happens.
On your journey, on your poi.
There is a word that I love in Tewa that is called O'en. O'en is our path, and it's our life's path. So as we're traveling seasonally, we are expressing and taking our journey on our path of life, or our O'en, as the Tewa people call our journey of life.
In a way, that Po'an is, expects that you will respond to the seasonal changes. And what's happened up around here is that many things seem to interfere with responding to the seasonal changes. I know a lot of people here at the college, for example, try to combine their trust in the seasonal changes, and certain dates mark when you're supposed to start planting or when the harvest should start. And so there's a calendrical relationship to events. But when you have a 9-to-5 job, or you work on shifts or in environments where you have to be on time and you have to stay so many hours and you can't pay attention, and even you can't even take off for the days that are supposed to be celebrating these seasonal changes. So with the astronomical events that happen to cause the Earth to get into those seasons, everybody has to let it go, a little bit at a time to let it go, so that we are no longer in tune. Maybe we feel it in our bodies, but if we can't do it because of the constraints of the kind of economy that this country is involved in, so many other people in the world, we have to step back and say, well, let somebody else do it then, because I have to have the money.
Well, I'll tell you what, for me, I remember yesterday. I remember yesterday when I went up to your house, your home, your land, and there was that urge to plant. And although we were a little bit late in planting because we are not young anymore, we are in our 60s and our 70s, and we can't prepare the land like we could if we were men or if we were younger. The fact is that we are in our 60s and our 70s, and we have this urge and this surge to want to grow some crops one more season. So I remember yesterday, off and on, all day long, planting white corn, and it took us all day to do three long.
You're listening to The Shift of Land, where we explore the connection between land and culture in New Mexico. Arnold Clifford, Dene botanist and geologist, explains the ritual of regeneration and how culture is connected to the land.
Our own botanical deity, we have our own god of botany that we call the humpback god. The deity is a close association with the He's used in the what we call the Nightway chant, or what's popularly known as the Yebiche ceremony. And he looks like Kokopelli, but he's some people might mistake his image as Kokopelli. He has a hump back, and there's like feathers on his hump, and there's like he wears a horn up on top of his head, and there's like a halo around his head. All those that have specific meanings, there's a specific symbolism that all those specific part of his body. He represents like the fertility. He represents like regrowth, regeneration of vegetation. And inside the back hump, on the back hump, you get that hump itself is actually like a rainbow with the feathers that stick out on the top part of the hump, which is the early morning rays of the sun coming on out. And then inside the hump itself, inside that bag, it's all full of native plant seeds. It's all full of all different types of precipitation, like male rain, female rain, mist, hail, snow, also like fog, any type of like dew, anything that deals with precipitation, it's inside that bag there. So during the coldest parts of winters, when you get extensive covers of fogs, you get these humpback gods that come out in droves, you know, in numbers, and they'll shake their backs, and when they shake their backs, all their seeds will come on out, and then they have a planter and planting stick, and they'll plant all these little seeds. And so during the springtime, you get this miraculous display of all these flowers coming on out. That's how we view our regeneration of our flowering period. The ceremony is really, it encompasses a lot of things. Like, just for example, the practitioner or the medicine man that performs the Nightway chant, it'll take him anywhere between 15 to 19 years just to learn that chant. You have to learn like maybe 300 plants and 600 songs, 500 sampans, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that's associated with it. So it's very, very involved. But it's all based on how to restore yourself, you know, with nature and, you know, your surroundings. So those are some examples that I would use just to give you like examples of how Navajos are really closely related to their land and like how we feel that interconnection with the land. We're starting to lose it though. We need to re-find that connection. There's a lot of what I consider bad outside influences that are starting to come on in, which are not really bad, but it's not good for the tribe, I think. It's not right for the tribe. You know, we have a very rich teaching of a different type of ceremonialism. We have a very rich teaching about plants. We have a very rich history. Even just the sheep itself, there's a whole lot of teaching based on sheep. And there's a whole lot of teaching based on, like, rug weaving. You know, the sheep is the basic thing, and then it goes to, like, your preparation, and it goes to your rug product, and your final product is the rug. So that's really interesting how that whole association goes like that.
The land gives us so much, and yet in our modern society we often forget and give little thanks. We turn everything into commodity rather than interaction. We see everything as separate rather than seeing the connectedness of everything, like the land and our cultures. Every action has its purpose and meaning.
With Navajos, we think about land on a daily basis. I think about plants and stuff like that on a daily basis. Like with plants, you know, we consider them plant people. They're dynamic, they're on the move, and they're, you know, you talk to them and stuff like that. Like we see it in our artwork, we see it in our sand paintings. Even just the teachings, the Navajo teachings, it's all from the land. Like man, women were developed from corn. Like man was developed from white corn, women was developed from yellow corn. And that's how our creation story starts off, you know, we're from the dirt, you know, from the ground. And well, like with Navajos, we consider like the ground, like we call it, like we pray in the morning, whenever, you know, it's not like only specified like on Sundays or like on certain times, any time of the day, you make offerings like to the earth, you know, like, you call it your mother earth, and then you make reference to the sky, which would be like your father or your, you know, the heavens. And then you realize that there's an interface between the heaven and the ground. There's something going on there, you know, and you're involved in that. You're part of that big old circle. That's why I put everything into perspective, like birds, trees, mammals. We're all related. We're all interconnected. You take out one out of the system, it's going to hurt something else. And that's the way I see it every day. You think about it, and like these stories that they tell you about, they'll say that in the past, you know, the Earth Service Bureau, the Navajos, we used to be able to communicate with birds. We used to be able to talk to all kinds of livestock, all kinds of animals, all kinds of insects. And we talked to the wind, we talked to the elements, and somehow we lost that. You know, we don't really do that anymore. But I still see that, you know. I see that everywhere I drive, I see these landforms. These landforms have a specific meaning to all of us. There's specific tales that are associated with each landform. And then you see it in the like sand paintings that we have. You see these four sacred plants on a lot of our paintings. You know, there's a lot of like the symbolism for the four sacred plants that come on out. You have symbolisms of the emergence hole where the Navajos first came out of from the ground, you know, from the lower world onto this world. And then a lot of our sand paintings, they have like animals that are also depicted either as guardians or like specific meanings to that particular painting. So we have not only our artwork, but also like our teachings. Even just being down at the market, you know, you see that really close association. You still see people down there selling their wares, like they sell their herbal medicine, they sell their tobaccos, they sell their, like, all these different herbal plants that they sell for different specific uses. And you find all these people with different stands, you know, they'll have, like, mutton that they produce off their own livestock, and then they'll have like corn that they grow themselves, and they'll incorporate that into their food where they can sell it to people. They'll have like steamed corn and nail down bread, and so you know you see it every day. It's a connection every day. With people that live in the city, I think they're more caught up with the city life and how they survive and how, you know, how they can compete with other people. But here, you know, it's more relaxed, more open. You have time to enjoy the land, and you enjoy the sunsets, and you work the land either by farming, by ranching, by livestock raising, you know, by harvesting seeds, and then also by, you know, just going hunting and stuff like that. You know, that's the way to harvest the land and live off the land. So I think a lot of people that live out here in the Southwest or the West, not only the Navajos, but Anglo societies that live out here, the Hispanics that live out here, they're really closely tied in with the landscape.
Land and water ties communities. Water is life. It gives us food and quenches our thirst. This is ethnobiologist Miguel Santisteban.
Well, I would say the greatest thing about all this is the Yasekya cleaning and the Yasekya herself. You know, because here we all get together to clean this Yasekya. And I've been doing this for several years now. And it's awesome for people who live in this community and clean Yasekya because it's part of this community and they're part of this community. And we all want to see this water flowing. We all become one. We are all on the mission to clean this Yasekya so this water can flow. We put everything aside. You know, I might not like this neighbor, I might not like that neighbor, but, you know, for the most part, we got to get along at this time and clean the Yasekya so this water can come to the land. So it represents our relationship with the land because the water has to flow so we can grow our food. So we can water the animals, grow the animals' food. And we have to rely on each other. We have to work together. There's a lot to be said about cooperation, communal labor, and sharing. You know, water sharing. When the water gets scarce, you know, the mayordomo just told me, we're going to sacrifice we're supposed to get 2/3 of the water. But our mayordomo has decided that, you know, that for a period of time, because the water's running out, we're going to give all the water to the other side. And he asked me how I felt about that. And I said, hey, those are the same people as us. If they're not getting enough water, let's give them the water. But let's schedule it so, you know, everybody has their turn. I'm hoping for 2 more full irrigations. And after that, I'm not going to ask for anything more from the mayordomo or from God. I will ask of those seeds to produce for me with whatever moisture we get. But that's what I would say it is. I would say it's the Yasekya cleaning is what brings our community together. It anchors us to this watershed. It anchors us to each other, to get along, to cooperate. My neighbor here is always saying, hey, I'll help you turn that land. Hey, you know, I've heard her say in several meetings, you know, we need to be more neighborly. We need to work more together. And that's it. We need each other. I would rather work with bringing the neighbors together and all of us working together than battling against some initiative that's going to disenfranchise us. Because ultimately we might get disenfranchised, but if we have each other, hey man, we'll figure this out as neighbors, as familia, as another set of hands who can do the work, you know, so we can divvy up what we produce and share. So that's what I think it is, the Yasekya cleaning. Is what really ties us to the land and to each other. And then the functioning of the Yasekya for the rest of the season. I love talking to my neighbors about the water and, you know, how their irrigation is going. And then, you know, the mayordomo comes up and tells me what other people are doing and, you know, or asks me what I need or if everything's, you know, I love that. Being connected to the other people in my community rather than just turning on the TV and watching the news.
Some ritual is less tied to religion as it is to necessity and tradition. This is Jason Tillman, farmer and rancher from near San Juan in the eastern part of the state.
The big still around here would be wheat harvest on that. You know, wheat harvest is a big deal still to this day. After all these years, after wheat doesn't pay anything and people know that, then wheat harvest is a big deal. I mean, my dad, he loves wheat harvest, man, and everyone around here, wheat harvest is a big deal, and I would say that's a cultural deal. They open the elevator, neighbors still help neighbors, not too much, but like I combined for my neighbor last year, 425 acres of his that I cut. You know what? He didn't pay me a dime. But he has a baler and a swather, so he's doing the same amount of acreage for me. It just takes a little longer. There's no festivals too much out here. I mean, this is totally different than northern Mexico, but I'd say wheat harvest is a big icon of our wheat culture. My family tradition is to sleep under the combine, you know, the first night of harvest. Everyone basically just works all night and sleeps on the combine, and that's the first day of harvest. I mean, and that you just stay in the field because you care about it. I'm a little bit different. I'm not a big wheat harvest fan. It's hot. My dad loves it, I'm telling you, and a lot of everyone around there does. But I will harvest, like even this year, we'll harvest like 320 acres or 200 acres seed wheat. So we'll have our little harvest, and I bet you I'll be sleeping on the combine. As long as there's enough beer and I'm warm enough under there, I'll be there. Family tradition.
I asked journalist and farmer Esteban Arellano what it means to be New Mexican.
Well, since I guess I was born and raised here, and my family goes back, way back, to me being New Mexican is simply who I am, you know, what I do, what I eat. Everything, you know, it's very complicated, but it's very simple. You know, I don't know how else to explain it, except that I consider myself a Nuevo Mexicano. I'd rather use a term Nuevo Mexicano than New Mexican. Again, New Mexican to me is an invention by the politicians when the state became part of the Union, and it should have been Nuevo Mexico, the same as California gave its Spanish name, California and Arizona and Colorado. Only this state became an anglicized version of New Mexican. For me, being New Mexican is just what I breathe, what I am, working the land, working with the acequias, what we grow in our place here. That's all part of the traditions of being a Nuevo Mexicano.
The land is where we come from. It shows us what it needs to allow us to live with it. For that reason, we create our rituals and traditions, and from there comes our culture and how we identify ourselves. Thank you for listening to this program. The program was made possible through a grant from the New Mexico Humanities Council in association with the National Endowment for the Humanities, as well as a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. We would like to thank Jack Rabbit for mailing support, Kit Carson Telecom for internet support, Venado Partners for web design, KRZA Radio, Dusty Yellow Thunder, associate producer, and all individuals who gave their time to be interviewed. Theme music was composed and performed by Fidel Gonzalez from El Caballero Aguila Recording Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You can hear full interviews and find more information about these issues at www.theshiftofland.org. I'm Sarah Parker. Thank you for listening.